The Kansas City Chiefs remain the only unbeaten team in the National Football League, but that'll be tested Monday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. The Chiefs Kingdom has a rich history in railroads, and for the Chiefs, this is the next train stop, Monday Night Football. And of course, defending the Kingdom is brought to you by Ticketmaster. I think several thousand of you might have used Ticketmaster to get the tickets in the game in Las Vegas because the stadium was all red.
Spread set, Minshew, fourth down and goal to go at the three. Looking right, steps up into the pocket, sacked, 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 Minshew goes down!
Hi everybody, I'm Mitch Holtis, voice of the Chiefs, along with senior team reporter Matt McMullen, and we're wearing our Salute to Service hoodies as we get ready for the Salute to Service games coming up in November as the Chiefs will start that on Monday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But let's start with just that. We talk about Ticketmaster. I've never seen a game in 31 years where the opposing stadium was, it had to be 4/5 Chiefs.
It was unbelievable. And we're used to that. It's cool because anywhere we go, there's a lot of red. But I've never seen that much red in a road stadium before, particularly from our vantage point up top. It was almost all red. I almost didn't see any Raider fans at all. I mean, it was loud. For the national anthem, it was actually
Was that our national anthem or was that Kazakhstan's?
That was pretty weird, wasn't it? It was.
That is the weirdest national anthem I've ever heard. I'm sorry, and I'm thinking, is that Sri Lanka? I couldn't tell. What
did he forget the words?
He forgot words, phrases, and the melody.
Yeah,
which is usually one of the three. You'll have the melody, but I don't remember the words. No, he didn't have anything.
And he'd go back.
He starts over, and he started over, and it was worse than when it began. And then the crowd just took over and go, dude, just stand down. We got it. And so the crowd sings the rest of it and said, get him off. You're way too young to remember an old-time TV show when I was a little kid called The Gong Show.
Okay.
And they would put these acts up there, and they were like crazy acts, and then some guy'd gong, and then they'd take a hook and take him out of there.
Yeah.
We were ready to gong that guy and just hook him out.
In Vegas, for the Raiders fans that were there, because of the Golden Knights, when the word night is spoken in the national anthem, they all shout, night, But they were getting confused because the singer was trying to get to that point, and at the point where it should have happened, you heard kind of like a half-hearted night, but he didn't say night, and then it was just confusing, then he went back. It was very strange. I thought my brain was ripping in two there for a moment. But fortunately, the Chiefs fans waited till the very end and were deafening when he actually finished it.
Well, and then, but the Chiefs fans are going, where's Chiefs coming in this? Because they're ready. Because the Knights fans are going, Knights, Chiefs, Knights. And then it just kind of blended together.
Yeah.
At first, I felt sorry for him. I'm like, this is so embarrassing. And then I go, no, I feel sorry for the rest of us listening to this. And so
he had a good voice. But okay. Didn't know the words, though. That's part of the component of
Matt is so
singing
positive.
The national anthem.
Matt is such a good guy, and he's so positive. He's going, at least he has a good voice.
Yeah, a good voice, yeah.
Well, then sing something else. But don't sing our national anthem and make it sound like it's, Monrovia's or something.
It was
like,
weird.
Wow, it was crazy.
Yeah, that was weird. But cool seeing all that red there. That was the saving grace.
And a win. And the Chiefs, 7-0. The first team in 35 seasons to come off a back-to-back Super Bowl championship and go 7-0. That was the San Francisco 49ers of 1990, which was the only back-to-back Super Bowl champion to make it to the conference championship game in that third year. So the Chiefs, they try to keep the train rolling here. Rick Burkholder was busy. He was on the field, of course, our vice president for athletic training and performance. But he also put up a meme on social media, which I love, because right after the game, it was this big Chiefs Kingdom train roaring down the track. And that's what this team feels like. Not to be cocky, not to show hubris here, but the next train stop for the Chiefs is Monday Night Football against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
And it's really hard to stop a train, right? Like if you see something on the horizon, you better stop it right then because it takes a long time for it to slow down. And this team is kind of like a train in a lot of ways because the Raiders at times were in the game, particularly when they had those two short fields. But just like a train is hard to slow down, it's hard to beat a team like the Chiefs even when you have good opportunities. And the Raiders are at the 28-yard line to start a drive, only settle for a field goal. And then they're inside the 5-yard line. And the Chiefs defense, that we keep saying is the best defense in the NFL, says, we know that you're knocking on the door, but if you want to score, you have to earn it. And they didn't. They couldn't get in. 4 straight plays, they actually go backwards. They net negative 5 yards. And I looked it up. That was the first drive to begin inside the opponent's 5-yard line against any team to not net any points since the Texans failed to do so in a similar situation back in 2022. So normally when teams are inside the 5-yard line and a drive begins inside the 5-yard line, they're probably going to score. The Chiefs said, not today.
You're so creative. Great writer. Love reading all your stuff.
Thank you.
When you said it's hard to stop a train, do you write copy for HVAC companies?
I don't, but I'm in the market.
I think I've heard that before. It's like, well done. So you're moonlighting. I see what
How
you're doing.
How about that?
Yeah. That's spelled the same. But the Chiefs Kingdom has a great history of railroad history. You think of Kansas City Southern, now CPKC. In fact, the current stadium.
Yeah, Go Current.
Go Current. The only stadium specifically for a women's soccer team.
Women's professional team in anything.
Anything. Yeah. CPKC Stadium. So it's pretty cool. But the Kansas City Southern tradition, mainly north-south, Canada to Mexico. But then you see in the Chiefs Kingdom, Union Pacific, which its history in Omaha and Council Bluffs, Iowa. There's an old, if you can find Hell on Wheels, if you can find it someplace, I don't know, Netflix or somewhere, it's a phenomenal series on the railroads going east and west. But great tradition of railroads. Union Station, I love going there. I love going there because my grandma and my two aunts would come from Smith Center on the train to Kansas City and feel like they were in Paris, France. But there were so many things and so many people. That basically was like air travel in the day, and Union Station was like KCI is now. So I love trains. I love train history to study it. It's fascinating how it affects history and affects in military operations. But it is hard to stop a train, T-R-A-I-N. And it's hard to stop this Chiefs train.
Yeah, it is, because you have to play a perfect game to beat this team. Because if you give the Chiefs an opportunity, you give them a chance, they're going to find a way to win it. And there's a lot of good to take out of the game on Sunday, some things to clean up. But you think about, we had 8 offensive possessions. We scored on 5 of them. We were 12 of 16 on third down, 3 for 4 in the red zone. And then defensively, again, just didn't let up an inch. And the score makes it look closer than it really was. The Chiefs essentially won that game by 2 touchdowns. Of course, the Raiders scored very late against kind of a soft defense that was making sure the Raiders had to burn clock in order to score. But the defense, the way it's playing right now, and the offense, I think, is really coming along. DeAndre Hopkins is going to fit right in. I mean, he was on the field for 23 snaps, ran 14 routes, 3 targets. His 2 catches were big ones. He had the big catch on third down on the 3rd play of the game. He's going to help us a lot in that area. There were some areas or some times in the red zone where he was open, and that's just a timing chemistry thing with Patrick Mahomes. That'll come. But also situational football is an area that he's going to help us a lot, and we saw that at the end of the first half where we're trying to make the field goal a little bit easier for Harrison Butker. What are you doing? You look for D-Hop, and D-Hop gets you 13 yards to put you well within Harrison Butker's range. I mean, that was after being here for just 3 days. Yeah. So as he's more and more integrated into the offense, get ready for a lot of DeAndre Hopkins. I'm very excited about him.
He acted like he was in every 2-minute drill in St. Joseph.
Yeah.
Every 2-minute drill in the OTAs. We had him in there in the 2-minute offense at the end of the half, and it was as if he was just as comfortable as he's been here in all 12 years of his career. Tells you a lot about D-Hop. The thing I tell you, if you could find the Chiefs Kingdom archived somewhere in the Chiefs Radio Network library, if you can find it, listen to the Monday night show, because Coach Reed, we talk about stacking up things, not just plays. You know, a player will stack plays up or games up. But for the Chiefs to stack up 2 games now, being 7 of 9 in the red zone with touchdown efficiency, is enormous, because the Chiefs prior to that was tied for 28th in the league. That was part of the stack up. The other part of it is the goal line stand, and talking about this, because this wasn't just this game. Obviously, Atlanta, go back to Cincinnati, go back to Baltimore. All of the situations were deep in having to defend our end zone. The Chiefs do it. But Justin Reed was so magnificent in explaining why and how it happens. And you know, he's so articulate. If you can find it, listen to it, because I just sat there with chills down my spine listening to Justin Reed, because It was phenomenal.
And speaking of him, some great adjustments were made on Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is a really good player and was making some plays in the first half, but we shut him down in the second half, and Jay Reeb was a big part of that. Really at the core of all of this, though, is our run defense. Our run defense is unbelievable. It's gotten to the point where when the other team hands it off, I'm like, good, great. It's almost a wasted down. Alexander Mattinson, who's a pretty good player, he had 15 rushing yards on 14 attempts. That's an average of 1.1 yard per carry. It's incredible. And against all opposing running backs now this year, we're allowing just 2.96 yards per carry. We're third in the NFL in rush defense because we played Lamar Jackson in week one and he was scrambling all over the place. But if you take him out, this defense hasn't allowed anyone to run at all. And it's just really been incredible. And you remove a team's running game almost entirely. You force them to throw the ball. It makes things very difficult for the opposing offense. So this run defense has been nothing short of incredible.
No running back has had over 50 yards this year. That's stupid in the NFL. All right, let's go around the world. We've waited way too long to jump into our spacecraft with our Salute to Service hoodies and travel around the earth.
Yeah, we're excited. So,
and we'll listen to everybody's national anthem as we go around. I don't know what line we're going to be at. What longitude line or latitude line?
Should we
line?
Start, like, I think maybe from now on with the podcast, you should start and then stop in the middle of your thought and go somewhere else, then come back. That's kind of what it was like.
We ought to have that dude with us. I don't remember the guy's name.
I don't either.
And have him go, hey, we're over Morocco right now. What's their national anthem? He'd sing the same song.
It was just very confusing.
Yeah.
It was brutal. I have 8 today for D-Hop. 8 around the worlds. It just worked out that way. It's the universe saying that DeAndre Hopkins is a Chief. Mark is listening from Versailles, Missouri.
Versailles.
Everyone from Versailles is reaching out. A shout out to his brothers, Ed and Steve, as well. Jack is listening from Madera Rancheros, California. Paul is in Hutchinson, Kansas. You know,
home of the Salt Hawks.
And actually,
The Trinity Celtics or the Central Christian Cougars.
I'm glad you said that.
Or the Nickerson Panthers.
He said specifically he really appreciates your knowledge of small towns in Kansas and Missouri, specifically how you know about everyone's high school mascot. So right on cue.
I'd ask him, is he from Hutch or South Hutch? He's from South Hutch. Is he a Nickerson Panthers? You go to the Haven Wildcats. I don't know.
Let us know,
maybe,
Paul.
Maybe a private school guy. But they're the Blue Drag. The Salt Hawks. Hutchinson Salt Hawks are a traditional power in football and very historic high school.
Salt Hawks is a cool name.
It is. Salt mines, right? They're okay. All those big salt mines are under Hutchinson.
All right. That makes sense. I like when the mascot makes sense with the area, which... it's not always the case. Most of the time, it's not the case.
If it doesn't, it needs to be thrown out.
Yeah.
Someday, if I retire, I'm just going to go high school to high school and go, nope, we're going to redo it. It's got to be something that has to do with your area. So,
I'm a Blue Valley North Mustang. Just being honest, not a lot of Mustangs running around.
Not in Leawood.
Not many. So
I'm trying to think what it would be, though.
I don't know. We'll figure it out. We'll work on that. We'll get a committee together. We have a listener in Avon Park, Florida. Kristen is in Perth, Australia.
Wow.
I want to go to Perth, Australia.
I do too.
I think that'd be really cool.
DTK in Perth, Australia.
They mentioned that Sunday's game was at 4:30 in the morning on Monday, but they got up early.
Breakfast in Perth.
Great way to start the week. Chiefs victory over the Raiders. Shout out again to Arkansas City. Yep, Arkansas City.
Well heard done. Way to go.
Thank you.
Or Ark City. You can just shorten it down and go Ark City, and everybody knows what you're talking about.
It's like when you're driving north and you see the exit for Nebraska City. It's always Neber City.
Yeah. N-E-B-R. Yeah,
yeah, Neber City. City.
You can just go Ark City. Go, man, where are you from? Ark City. Everybody knows.
Yeah, Ark City. Well, Arkansas City. We heard from multiple people there, and they appreciated that we got it right. So shout out to all of you.
They're sensitive about it. I'll just tell you that.
I get it, yeah. You'll like this one. Elliot lives in Sweden and invited us to come.
We're in.
He's going to show us around. I would love to go. So
after we go to Perth, we'll just go to
we'll rack up our miles. Yeah, no big deal. But we'd love to come, Elliot, so we'll see you there.
My wife's Swedish. She wants to go.
There we go. Yep. I also met Frank in the elevator at Allegiant, decked out in his Chiefs gear. And that was great. And he listens to the podcast and everything. Thanks for listening, Frank. Thanks for saying hi.
He and 70,000 of his friends.
Yeah, thanks for representing Chiefs Kingdom along with everyone else there. at the Death Star. That was awesome. And then lastly, if Bill in Cambodia is listening, So remember this? We heard from Todd and Mary in Cambodia. The next week we heard from Bill in Cambodia. Well, Todd reached out to me and said if I can link them together, that he would love for them to get together in Cambodia. So
we're supposed to do that?
Well, I'm helping connect these people. Oh. So Bill, if you were listening, Todd and Mary want to link up. So Bill, send me an email. My email is on the Chiefs website. Like, go to an article that I've written. You can see like a little email icon. You can send me an email or DM me on Twitter. Whatever way you want to reach me, and shoot me your information, and I will connect you guys. All I ask for is
and then
a
photo. You can just ping coordinates for them to get together, like in Phnom Penh.
I can't.
Is that what we're doing?
Exactly. I have Todd's email address, so I can connect them. Okay. All I want is a photo of you guys in Phnom Penh, so I can connect you, and that will be great. Lastly, I have some trivia from Steve. Steve is a listener, great guy.
Where's Steve
with him often. Oh, he's told me. I forget off the top of my head, but Steve's great.
Perth.
He's not from Perth, but I still want to go to Perth. Okay, this is a tough trivia question. Are you ready for it?
Yeah.
And this is historical. This isn't like current. It's a historical trivia question. So what Chiefs and Raiders wide receivers went to the same high school? Here's the parameters. Both of these players played their whole career for either team. So the Chiefs receiver played his whole career with Kansas City. The Raiders receiver played his whole career with them. They both won Super Bowls with their respective team. And this is kind of going way back, so this isn't anything recent. But a Chiefs and Raider wide receiver both played their whole career with their team, both won a Super Bowl with their team, and they went to the same high school.
Well, I'm just going to throw out Otis Taylor.
Yes, yes!
But there's one.
Okay.
But now I got to find the Raider that would be in that group. And Otis...
That was impressive, though.
He went to Prairie View and AM, so I'm trying to think where Otis was from originally. One of those Raider receivers. It's too
I'm
early
impressed.
For Cliff Branch.
No, it's not. It's Cliff Branch.
Cliff Branch.
You got it. You got it.
Let's go to Perth.
This is ridiculous.
Celebrate. No, it's not.
I was thinking you know everything. I was like, still, that's very obscure and random. Good job.
You knew it does know everything?
Who?
You know where else I want to go?
Where?
Maybe we do this. Where are we thinking? Could we go to Perth to Sweden? You know where we're going to stop?
Where?
Athens, Greece.
Okay.
You know why?
Why?
We're going to check in on George Karlaftis.
Let's do it.
Because you had a chance to talk with George.
I sure did.
And two big plays that George made in that game against the Raiders. But George, to me, epitomizes what Justin Reed laid out for our defense in the fact unselfish, doesn't chase sacks, super efficient, defends the run, defends the pass, defends tunnel screens, super smart and super tough. He is a great prototype for this defense.
He's having an awesome season. He is the prototypical kind of player that you take in the first round, and he just gets better and better every single year. He's turning into one of the best pass rushers in the NFL. And like Mitch said, I had a chance to catch up with George a few days ago. All right, we're joined now by George Karlaftis. And George, a lot to talk about here, but looking at last week against the Raiders, what's the mentality like when the Raiders take over, there's a sudden change inside the 3-yard line, you guys go out there, but you make them earn every single yard, they don't get in the end zone? How do you explain that? How do you explain making sure they couldn't score there?
You know, for us, we take a lot of pride in being able to stop the opponent in critical situations, and being able to have the offensive back after a sudden change was huge for us. You know, it's something we practice all the time, and just being able to get there and prevent them from scoring any points, that was huge for the momentum of the game.
When you stop on the first 3 downs, are you almost hoping they go for it on 4th down?
Oh, yeah, for sure. You know, ideally you want to hold them, you know, you want to keep them from scoring 4, you know, we call it 4 points because then the field goal touchdown type thing. But for us going them, you know, we stop them 3 times, then they get a 4th chance. We have a lot of confidence we stop them 3 times. So
it's amazing how this defense has grown really since you've been here in your draft class. It's cool because if you go back to the draft fest when you were on stage, Leo was out there, Trent McDuffie, just all you guys, and to think how you've helped this defense become what it is. I mean, do you remember the last time you guys allowed 30 points? It's been a long time.
It's been a while. I don't know if we did. We didn't last year,
nope.
Did we?
It was the Eagles Super Bowl was the last time. It's been that long. And just how much pride do you guys take every single week in making sure that you put the offense in a position to win the game and that the opposition, no matter who it is, they're not scoring 30 points?
Absolutely. You know, we have all the confidence in the world in our offense, and we know if we could keep the opponent under a certain amount of points that we'll have a pretty good chance to win. You know, so we like to play as a team here at the Chiefs. Obviously, you know, the offense has trust in the defense, vice versa, and we kind of play off of each other. Defensively, we love playing with each other. We have a lot of confidence. We have a lot of fun when we play together, and, you know, we've played together for quite some time, it feels like now, so it's a lot of fun.
Well, it's crazy. You're a veteran now, but it still feels like you just got here. But
yeah,
I mean, you're already one of the best defensive players in the NFL. I'm sure you'd credit Spags quite a bit in making you the player that you are.
Of course.
Can you just talk a little bit about Spags and his influence on you?
Oh, I mean, Spags does everything out of love. You know, you got to know that about Spags. He does everything out of love, but he's always going to get on you a certain way. You have so much respect for the guy, you know, with all the stuff he's done in his career, that you almost, same thing with Coach Reed, you just don't want to let them down. So when you do something, you can see the disappointment, you know, that if it's something like negative, obviously, or when they ask you something, you're going to do it no matter what, just because of how much respect and love they've shown you. So it's kind of like that. You know, Spags demands better out of every single player on that team, on the defense. So definitely.
I remember some of the guys talking about D-Bet in the offseason and how Spags, I think, on the first day of camp, talked about how he had a really great defense 1 year in New York. Next year, they kind of fell off, and you guys were like, we're not going to let that happen.
Yeah.
How do you guys come together? And, I mean, you've shown that already this year. How can you explain just the camaraderie, the mentality of this group as a whole, that we're going to be even better than we were last year?
Yeah, I think just like my previous answer, you know, it all stems from love. You know, we have a group of guys here that we love playing with each other. We get along great. Not just with each other, with our coaches too. And there's a lot of mutual trust and respect with that. And, you know, when you have love, trust, respect, and, you know, great things happen. So we try to demand better out of each other when it starts. That started all the way in the off season. You know, just try to keep getting better in every asset of your game. You know, for me as a defensive end, pass rushing, stopping the run, you know, just little details with that. And then when every person on that field takes care of what they need to do, ultimately it'll come together as one big whole and, you know, lead to wins.
And how about this run defense? Because it's amazing. You guys have faced Derrick Henry, Alvin Kamara, Bijan Robinson, J.K. Dobbins.
Yep.
Could go on and on. None of those guys topped 60 rushing yards on you. And especially as a pass rusher, that's a mindset thing.
Absolutely.
Like some pass rushers, they don't care about that.
I know a lot of guys, there's two guys on our defensive line that, you know, it's natural in their position, the nose guard, that don't get a lot of love and credit. You know, I'll give credit to Mike Pinnell and Derek Nnadi. You know, those guys have been killing it. Maybe they don't all get the recognition, you know, just because there's not as many stats. But, you know, those guys are unsung heroes for us. You know, not just them. You know, we got everybody that's ultimately playing their responsibility and playing disciplined football. But when it's stopping the run, it starts with the nose guards. You know, being physical, being disciplined, trickles obviously to everybody else too. But those men in the middle, they're where it starts.
Were you happy for Big Mike getting that force fumble last week?
Oh, man, I was so happy for him. Yeah, that was great.
Looking at the Bucs, final question. It's obviously a good offense. They lost a couple of their receivers. We all know that, but still really good offense. What are your expectations for this game? How do we contain Baker Mayfield and this offense?
Absolutely. You know, when you watch film on them, you can't help but have a lot of respect for them. You know, they've lost, obviously, like you said, some playmakers, but they haven't lost a beat, it seems like, offensively. It starts with the great O-line. Obviously, the quarterback you mentioned, he can make all the throws. He's mobile. You know, they got great backs, great receivers, tight ends, everything. We got a lot of respect for them. We're going to have our hands full. You know, they're a good offense, but we'll be ready.
Well, you're a good defense, too. One of the best defenses in the NFL. I think it is the best defense in the league. And this guy is a big reason why. All right, great stuff there from George. Just so fired up about him. I love his motor. I love, obviously, his athleticism, his ability, but also just who he is as a guy. He just comes in here and wants to be a part of this defense and be a big part of it. And we're seeing all that work pay off.
20 years from now, we're going to look back at this defense and realize how remarkable it was.
Yeah.
I mean, in every way, shape, or form. It's when you look back at, like, the Super Bowl IV defense of the Chiefs, and you're going, oh, my, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame, Hall of Fame. They were very much like this group, cerebral, tough, mature, could handle adversity. These guys up and down the line. That's what I'm saying. If you can find the Justin Reed interview from the Chiefs Kingdom show on Monday night, find it. I just sat there and was mesmerized as he laid it out. I go, I've never heard anybody articulate it as well as he did of why this defense does what it does and the challenge they have this week as we go to look at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the next stop on the train track.
And just staying with this defense for a moment, they've held 28 consecutive opponents under 28 points. In the modern NFL, 28 points really isn't even that much. I mean, teams score 28 points all the time. And think about if it's like garbage time or something, just you'd think at some point over the last year and a half, the Chiefs would allow 30 points to somebody. And they haven't. And they've done it against a lot of great teams, teams like the Lions, the 49ers, the Bills, the Ravens, the Bengals, just really anyone who's good in the NFL. The Chiefs have probably played them over the last year and a half, and the common denominator is none of those teams have scored more than 27 points. It's just incredible. It's the longest streak for any team in 17 years, and let's try to keep it going here against the Buccaneers.
And who's standing at the next train station? It is Baker Mayfield. You can Henry, feisty, mercurial. But to me, one of my favorite stats going into this game, we know how good the Chiefs defense is in blitzing. The blitz rating for a quarterback playing the Chiefs this year, the Chiefs are by far the best team in this category defensively, is a rating of 49.54, which is brutal, right? When the Chiefs blitz, the opposing quarterback melts. Mayfield is second best in the NFL versus the blitz at 136.34.
Wow.
To me, that's going to be a bit of the that's going to be a crux of the matter in many ways in this game, because Mayfield can improvise. We've seen how effective he has been even in trying to adjust without Chris Godwin and Mike Evans, but he did so against Atlanta. It's just avoiding the mistakes. But if you pressure him and blitz him, who's going to win this battle of the best against the second best?
And Baker is fearless. I think that's the best compliment I can give him. He's not afraid of anything or anybody, and I think that's why he's so good against the blitz, because he's going to stand in there and deliver the football. He's not going to worry about what's going to happen. And I respect him a lot. He's had a really nice career, really a resurgence here in Tampa Bay. You look at his numbers right now, he's having the best year of his career. Yeah. And really almost every category. He has 21 touchdown passes already. His career high is 28, which was last season. He's going to blow right by that. Now, you mentioned how Evans and Godwin are gone. That is very important, because Mike Evans and Chris Godwin form one of the best wide receiver tandems in the entire NFL. They've combined for 76 catches, 911 receiving yards, and 11 touchdowns this year through the air. It's very difficult to replace that production. They're going to turn to Kate Otten. Tight end, pretty good player. He has 36 catches for 344 yards and 3 touchdowns. Had 9 catches and 2 touchdowns on 10 targets last week. They have Jalen McMillan, maybe a distant cousin of mine, spelled a little bit differently, but still. The rookie out of Washington, Trey Palmer, second-year player out of Nebraska, is there. So they have capable players, but not having Godwin, not having Evans is a big, big deal. And it does kind of skew the numbers a little bit, where Baker's used to having these two all-pro receivers at his disposal, and now he doesn't. So it changes things quite a bit. I'm curious to see how the Bucs choose to attack us without those guys.
But the Atlanta game gave the indication how they're going to adjust. Until they get Evans back, they're not going to get Godwin back. But they become tight end running back centric.
Sure, yeah.
But still effective. He had 330 yards against Atlanta. But here's the other piece of the Atlanta game that goes back to my blitz stat, is that this is a good offensive line led by Tristan Wirfs, who switched from right tackle to left tackle, and he's been very good. 50 dropbacks against Atlanta by Baker Mayfield.
Man.
And 0 sacks. There weren't even that many pressures. So can the Chiefs, blitzing or otherwise, get pressure on Baker Mayfield with a good offensive line? But the running backs, you mentioned Kate Otten. The targets went way up for him, good tight end. But Rashad White, a Kansas City kid. For the second time in 3 weeks, we're going to play a center high school Yellow Jacket.
Wow.
Think of that.
That's crazy.
Now, I hope that Rashad White doesn't throat punch Patrick Mahomes like Malik Collins did, who was the last center Yellow Jacket,
yeah,
who played against this place for the 49ers. But, like, come on, dude. It's like, that's not MMA here.
Yeah.
But Rashad White, interesting, went to Nebraska Kearney, played Division II football for the Lopers there for a while, then JUCO, then Arizona State, and is a really, really good running back for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But the guy that catches my attention is Bucky Irving, because I think this is an emerging star. He's really one of the top rookie running backs when you look at all the statistics, and a very capable receiver. So without his top two wide receivers, Baker Mayfield's going to figure out a way to get it done, and right now it's the tight ends and running backs.
Those two runners form a really nice combination, and they've almost split the carries right down the middle. We'll see a lot of both of those guys. You're right to like Irving. He's good. He's averaging more than 5 yards per carry this year. And then Rashad White can really catch the ball out of the backfield. He's third on the team with 28 catches, and that's fifth in the NFL among all running backs. So I'm with you. We're going to see a lot of tight ends, a lot of running backs catching the ball out of the backfield. Got to be ready for that. But this is a good team still. I mean, you take out Mike Evans, you take out Chris Godwin, they're still very talented. And like I said, Baker Mayfield is scared of absolutely no one. So he'll come out firing. They could have won that game against Atlanta. last week. But what's kind of interesting with Mayfield as well, he does have 9 interceptions. That's tied for the most in the NFL. And I know all the non-Chiefs fans that are listening are going to run and say, tied with Patrick Mahomes. I get it. Not every interception is created the same, though. Yeah. We all know this. So Pro Football Focus has a stat called turnover-worthy plays. And basically what they do is they take out the tip passes, you know, the balls that maybe hit a receiver in the hands and bounce off into the DB's hands. They take those out and they kind of figure out how many turnover-worthy plays have you committed. Well, Mayfield has 14 turnover-worthy plays. That's second most in the NFL. Patrick Mahomes has 7, which is 18th in the NFL. And it's funny, Patrick Mahomes has less turnover-worthy plays than he has interceptions. So there's some bad luck involved with that, is what I'm trying to say. But with Mayfield, the 9 interceptions are more...
Or tip passes?
Yeah.
Yeah. That seems to me like that's the demarcation line there.
Exactly.
That's not a turnover-worthy play? Do we know?
I wouldn't assume so. This is all subjective in the end. Like, someone's watching this and deciding it.
And who's the someone?
I don't know, in the PFF
in
mega
the basement?
Headquarters. Yeah. Yes. But the point is... Patrick Mahomes, yeah, has 9 interceptions, but they're not all necessarily on him. The numbers at least tell us here, Baker Mayfield has thrown 9 picks. He has 14 turnover-worthy plays. Baker Mayfield's interceptions, to me, speak a little louder than Patrick Mahomes do. So this defense, which has been opportunistic, Big Mike Pinnell had that forced fumble on Gardner Minshew last week, and the week prior we had 3 interceptions. Take the ball away from this team, it obviously creates some opportunities for our offense. And I mean, the Bucs have 12 giveaways as a team. That's 5th most in the NFL. So kind of a similar recipe we've seen the last couple weeks defensively could work on Monday.
We'll close this way, this next train stop, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers on Monday Night Football. The mystery here is the Tampa Bay defense. They have been riddled, to be honest. Now, the Bucs started 3-1. They're 1-3, so now they're sitting at 4-4. But a lot of it is big plays given up by this defense. This is still a defense. So these are going to be familiar names to you. You remember them from Vita Vea, who destroyed the line of scrimmage in Super Bowl 55. Levante David, for you Nebraska Cornhusker fans, who has been one of the more underrated impact linebackers in the league. Injury situation, but he's been fighting. Antoine Winfield Jr. Got paid big time. I think he's the highest paid DB in the league right now. But the point is, this defense has been pushed around, shoved around, big plays against them. Kirk Cousins has nailed these guys twice. And so the Chiefs have an opportunity, I think, to get big chunk plays against this Bucs defense, which, other than the turnovers, is the reason they're 4-4.
Yeah, to your point, they've allowed 35 plays of 20 or more yards, 5th most in the NFL. They've allowed at least 27 points in each of their last 4 games. And they're allowing 132 rushing yards per game. Now, they played the Ravens this year, so that kind of skews it a little bit. But if you dig into it, I mean, they've allowed 138 yards to the Commanders on the ground, 139 rushing yards to the Lions, 136 to the Broncos, 129 to the Falcons. And they're allowing overall on the year 5.19 yards per carry, 3rd highest rate in the NFL. So we've seen the Chiefs really commit to being a power running team at times with Kareem Hunt, just getting a lot of carries. And I was telling you on the bus when we were leaving Las Vegas, Kareem might be the MVP of the offense at this point in the year, just because of what he's been able to do handling the load and getting tough yards. He had so many tough yards against the Raiders last week. There's an opportunity again for that, for Kareem to have a really productive day, and that opens things up for everyone else. We'll have another full week of DeAndre Hopkins in practice. Maybe we'll see more from him. Xavier Worthy had a productive day against the Raiders, had some drops, but made up for that with a touchdown at the very end. And Travis Kelce had his best game of the season. So let's run the ball against these guys, and things will open up in the passing game.
The big stat always, and Spags will talk about it, for a defense is scoring defense. And the Chiefs right now in scoring defense, the best they've been since the mid-90s, even better than a year ago. But the Jacksonville Jaguars and the Carolina Panthers are the only two teams that have allowed more points than the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Might be time to hit the next train station and score some points as the Chiefs try to stay unbeaten on Monday Night Football.